Support for the Closing Market Report podcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land-Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the ninth day of August, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. That's in Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll take up the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute. And we'll talk with Ben Proust today. He's at the Andersons, not in Indiana, not in Illinois, but he's way out in Everly, Iowa. That's in the northwestern part of the state. We're looking forward to having a discussion with him as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Remember, you can find us online at WILLAG.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Let's check the numbers as they settled up in Chicago for a Friday afternoon. The soft red winter wheat down 7 3/4 at $6.33 1/2. December at $6.47 1/4 finished 6 1/2 cents lower. The hard red in Kansas City for the December at $7.03 1/2. That's down 3 1/4 cents. Corn futures back in Chicago, September contract, $4.65 3/4, 7 3/4 lower. December at $4.53 1/4, down 6 1/2 cents. And the March futures at $4.66 3/4, down 6 1/2 as well. May contract $4.81 1/4, down 6. September at $4.85, down 5 3/4. And next year's December corn for 2014 at $4.89 3/4, 6 cents lower. August soybeans $13.40 3/4 1/cent, 15 cents lower. September at $12.18 1/2, down 9 1/4. And November beans at $11.82 1/4, 2 cents lower. January futures $11.88 1/4 lower. The March contract down 3/4 at $11.92 1/2. And next year's November at $11.62 1/4, down 3 cents for the afternoon. Bean meal futures finished $2 lower at $4.20.50. Bean oil at $41.40, down 25 cents. Live cattle futures at $122.50 for 100 pounds, settled 17 1/2 cents lower in the August. October down 20 at $126.87 1/2. August feeders at $153.85, down 40. And September futures 35 cents lower at $157.47 1/2. August lean hogs at $100.52 1/2, a dime lower. October down 27 1/2 for the day at $84.97 1/2. You're listening to Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, September contract, $106, and then nickel up $2.65. RBOB gasoline or wholesale price at $2.90 4/10 cents, up 4 6/10 cents. And ethanol futures today, $2.14 1/2, 3 1/2 cents lower. The difference between those two now stands at 75 9/10 cents. That's 8 1/10 cents wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $3.22 4/10, down 7 2/10, and diesel fuel at $2.99 6/10 cents, 3 8/10 cents higher. Gold futures finished at $1,312.50 an ounce, up $2.40, and the U.S. dollar at 81.13 is up 0.15 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like. This comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. A 20% chance of rain showers, mostly cloudy otherwise, a high of 81 degrees. And then this evening, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms. And we'll have a low this evening of 62. Mostly sunny skies tomorrow, a high of 81 on a north-northeast wind at 3 to 6 miles an hour. Saturday evening, partly cloudy and 58. And on Sunday, mostly sunny skies, a beautiful day, a high of 82 degrees. East-northeast winds at about 5 miles an hour. They'll be light and variable in the afternoon. And then Sunday evening, partly cloudy and 65 degrees. Rainfall, maybe, on Monday, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Those will come after 8 a.m. on the morning. Partly sunny otherwise, 82 degrees. And Monday evening, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, and a low of 62. We'll talk more about the weather forecast closer to the bottom of the half hour when Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, joins us right here on the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the Closing Market Report for the ninth day of August 2013. On the phone line from Atchison, Kansas, at the offices of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, is Mike Zuzlo. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, tell me about the marketplace. How did the beans perform, and what did their performance mean to you?
Well, beans performed great early on. It was after midday, Todd, they really gave up the ghost, and it seemed as though the midday weather pattern shifting a little bit more rain into southern Minnesota and Iowa, along with some failures at some technical resistance levels, probably were the major catalysts to the shift back, and that gave the August beans a daily range of a little over 25 cents, around 26 and a quarter cents. For so pretty exciting day in the bean market, and it turned exciting in the corn and wheat. Once the beans gave up, the corn and wheat resumed their downtrend, new 14-month lows in the wheat market, and the September corn took out its weekly low, pushing it down to levels not seen since October of 2010 again. So I think bottom lining it all out, without the beans able to support and be the catalyst for an upside push on pre-report jitters, the market turned and had bearish pre-report jitters, with the corn and wheat leading the declines.
I made note in one of the emails that you sent out today, of course, that you talked to other farm broadcasters throughout the day on the radio, an Ohio farm broadcaster, and you had a discussion with him about, I think, an Ohio crop report. Folks made their way through the fields. What did it show?
Well, one of your colleagues in Ohio and another national farm broadcasting person, Ty Higgins, there at the Ohio AgNet, and his group with Dale Mino and a couple other folks took
great
up.
Great guys in Ohio, by the way.
Yeah, that guy's from Ohio. People you know, maybe not the listeners, but they took up a tour, and this is the one they do annually,
mm-hmm.
And I was very surprised to hear him say that they could not do any better than average to above average when looking at corn. They go into very good detail on their website. They have a couple agronomists interviews on there. It sounds like gray leaf spot is a big issue. One agronomist also talked about later in the month, maybe within 2 weeks even, an SDS or sudden death syndrome breakout may be an issue in Ohio for the bean plants there. So I was astounded because, you know, a lot of people have been talking about how big that Ohio crop's going to be and help offset the Iowa crop, and wanted to get that out to the clients and the subscribers to let them hear with their own ears so that they can get some good analysis and get a well-rounded analysis of boots on the ground. I think it's especially important as we segue into that Pro Farmer Tour next week as well.
Yeah, and the Pro Farmer Tour, by the way, we'll have updates from that each and every day during the Closing Market Report. I'll collect those during the day from both the east and the west legs, and then we'll settle those out during the Closing Market Report in the afternoon, so you can pick up kind of the latest of what they've been finding from both the east and the west side of the Corn Belt. Another item, and this came, I think, this came in from another broker. I saw saw the map, and it just reminded me, as you were mentioning Ohio and the corn crop, which is a pretty good-sized corn crop. I was thinking the sixth, but it is the seventh largest corn crop in the producing state in the nation. And South Dakota actually produces more corn than Ohio, which really threw me.
Right.
And by a couple hundred million bushels, if I remember correctly. But
yeah, that's right. You know, if you take Iowa and Minnesota and obviously Illinois, and you add into that the Kansas, Ohio, Indiana, and South Dakota crops, you're nearing 80% of the production or thereabouts.
And yeah.
So you've got a pretty concentrated area, even with this big of acres.
Right, right. So it's we usually talk about the five top corn-producing states in order. They're Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Minnesota, and then Indiana. South Dakota, and then Ohio are 6 and 7. But among those, that top five, I think, actually produces, I was looking at that number, about 7.8 billion of the 14, 13 and a half or whatever it is.
Yeah, so, right around 50%.
Yeah. So there's a lot of corn in a lot of these states, and it'll be fun to watch and see what Chip and company find on the Pro Farmer Tour. But before we get to that, we have to get through the USDA reports on Monday. And I don't know whether the yield number, the acreage number for soybeans, or the WASD figures will be the most interesting of that whole set of reports that are due out at 11 o'clock, of course, on Monday morning, Mike.
I think the biggest issue will be, number one, do we have a 14 billion bushel crop or more in the August report? And then the trade will probably segue into the idea, if we do, it's going to only get bigger with more grain fill because of our recent weather. So I think that's probably top priority for the trade, especially the trade that has discounted the prices so aggressively. And like we've been talking about throughout the last few weeks, at a 450 Dec corn price, I think you're probably at a 2.2 billion bushel carryover as far as the elasticity model that I use. Number two, and it's not a distant second, it's right next to it, would be those bean acres, because the bean acres will translate back into the corn production, and whether the USDA shifts a lot of bean acres into beans out of corn, and then you'll get an idea also, I hope, of whether the soft red wheat delayed harvest in some areas did a job on not getting enough or as many double crop beans planted as well. So those are probably going to be the top two things to watch, and maybe a distant third will be the world wheat number. I don't think the market, at least the people I talked to the last couple weeks in Chicago and colleagues in the ethanol industry, not really thinking about the wheat hardly at all right now.
Hey, Mike, do you think, given what you just told me, that a 450 corn is a 2-2 carry out, that's what the trade is at the moment, since
yes,
we're at 453 and a quarter?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
What? Okay, now the second question then, if that's truly the case, doesn't that seem like a pretty good price for a 2.2 billion bushel carryout?
Well, I think that's where it goes back to the world supply-demand and the stocks-to-use ratios when you add all total grains together, and I think that's where it goes back to why the corn has helped lead the wheat lower and why the wheat has helped lead the corn lower, and the tighter the global wheat numbers get, the less likely the U.S. average cash price needs to come down. So eventually those do matter. Those global numbers do matter. And so we are still going to be tight. And, you know, China's government came out today and did say they were going to, in fact, raise their imports of wheat, raise their imports of corn, not as much as USDA's July report, but we are seeing problematic areas of supply that, you know, would be maybe more non-traditional buyers, or when they do come in, it's pretty significant. So that's how I would equate that. And I think the other thing that I've looked at, Todd, is I've kind of thrown out the 2008-2009 time frame, especially 2009, because of the fact that we were in the financial crisis. And I think all asset classes were being hit, and maybe the lower price in corn at that time was due in part to the financial crisis and the credit crisis. So 2009 is kind of an anomaly year in my model.
All right. So when you look at that, you see those, was that the $3?
Yeah, 360, yeah. 340, yeah. Something, you know, right in that area.
So what are you throwing off? 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 cents? What are you throwing out of for that?
I'm sorry?
How much lower? I mean, do you think we're off then a dollar, a dollar 10, a dollar 20 than from what we are today?
If we had a 2.2 billion bushel crop, that would put you at right at about a 420, 410 cash crop. And so I think that's where you're talking about 60 cents difference, roughly, compared
to 2009.
Okay,
that's what I was trying to get at, right. Okay.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Right. Okay. Yep. Okay, so now let's do one last thing before I let you go. And then, of course, I've got you on Commodity Week. Thank you for being on that program, too. And we'll record at 4:30 this afternoon, post that to Will Ag at about 6. But I do want to take up the livestock sector. You and I talked a bit this morning about two things. Of course, we've got one item happening with the hogs and a second item happening with the cattle. One puts the livestock off feed, and one puts them, well, not quite off feed, but you got to give them more feed to get them to finish.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Yeah, so
right.
It kind of a fun thing happening there, too. Well, not fun if you're in the midst of it, I'm sure. Right,
so. No, and this is where it goes back to the box beef prices and how they've been really languishing and not really, bids and offers can't come together, it seems like, this pretty much this whole summer. and the pork demand has been steadily increasing, and the supply has been steadily either steady or dropping a little bit, and we're starting to get into this time period where the market-ready hogs will be probably affected by the PED virus from several months ago. And one of the clients that I spoke with today had talked to his veterinarian about the PED virus in particular, especially in light of Tyson coming out and saying we're not going to take Zilmax-fed cattle anymore. It goes back to the PED virus probably is just in a remission, and that in the wintertime, that may very much come back. And so I think you really have an issue with your supply side, a very big question mark. And how I translate that in the analytical world and when it comes to what I deal with the clients on is if I hedge $100 hogs, which are a good price, I'm not going to do anything in futures. I'm going to stick with known cost puts because there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty after this week on what the supply of both cattle and hogs are coming by the time we get to the holidays.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Thank you. Talk to you later, sir.
I'm Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, the United States Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, has been in Brazil, providing officials there with an honest assessment about the situation of the cotton case. While the farm bill is still pending, the secretary has reportedly told Brazilian officials that USDA is running out of money and authority to make payments in the World Trade Organization Cotton Subsidies Agreement. The U.S. agreed to make an annual $147 million payment to Brazil until the next farm bill changed cotton subsidies in 2010 after a WTO panel ruled U.S. cotton subsidies had inflicted harm on the Brazilian cotton industry. But according to Vilsack, the budget restrictions placed on the department by the sequester will allow him to make only half the payment promised to Brazil in September. On October 1st, he says, he'll lose authority to make payments at all. President Obama did not include the payments in his fiscal year 2014 budget. Vilsack noted the administration assumed a farm bill with provisions to establish a new cotton program would be passed before the beginning of the fiscal year. Speaking of the farm bill, the National Farmers Union president, Roger Johnson, is reemphasizing the importance of signing a five-year comprehensive farm bill into law before the current law expires on the 30th day of September. Johnson sent a letter to Senate and House Agriculture Committee leaders to stress the importance of appointing a full Farm Bill Conference Committee as soon as possible so members can get back to work on a compromise in time for final passage by legislative bodies and for the president's signature. There are only 9 legislative days in the month of September. And finally today, this little note about a farm broadcaster north of us. Nationally known farm broadcaster Max Armstrong has a brand new free smartphone and tablet app that allows vintage tractor enthusiasts to test their tractor trivia skills, enjoy stories of classic machines, and more. Max Armstrong's tractor app is available for iPhone, iPad, and Android phones and tablets. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. We know the locks and dam legislation that's been working its way through Washington, D.C. for what seems decades now has been in a labyrinth of challenges and will continue to be so come fall. And key parts of that bill might even have to be split off and reassembled in the House-Senate bargaining. The unending maze of challenges facing the 2013 Water Resources Development Act, or WRDA, is almost as complex as a barge's trip down the Mississippi lock system. Key to modernizing those locks is a 6 to 9 cent boost in the barge fuel tax, now gone from a Senate-passed version, and removal of the over-budget Olmsted project from the Waterstead Trust Fund. Waterways Council Senior Vice President Deborah Colbert.
The Senate bill would be removed from any further payment from the trust fund, which is a good thing. Again, we have not seen the House draft bill yet, so we don't know if it's in there. However, if it's not in there, and if the user fee is not in there, we would hope to see that get added during conference or when it comes to the floor.
Colbert argues there's support for the user fee in the Senate, but it had to be ditched for constitutional reasons, since just the House can originate taxes. And she expects that to happen. While some will oppose any tax hike, Congress has a crowded fall calendar, squeezing committee and floor time though Colbert says House leaders want to move a bill seen as key for ag and other jobs.
There's such great ag support for the expansion of those locks on the upper miss in Illinois. There continues to be a lot of outcry about that. So, you know, we feel confident that at least this is a starting point. If we can get, you know, what we support in the House, get the increase in the user fee, get Olmstead taken off.
But just as with the last word of bill, projects must be funded through separate appropriations.
We are going to focus hard on getting those appropriations in a regular way. And I think the House bill will address that as well. They are really going to be focused on, you know, more and regular reauthorization so that we don't have this six-year period of time or more.
Between word of bills. Also helping spur appropriations, the increased diesel user fee, adding tens of millions of dollars a year to the trust fund, money dedicated to replacing the now 80-year-old locks that are well past their intended lifespan.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, you are listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us from Everly, Iowa today at the Andersons facility there is Ben Pruis. Good afternoon to you, Ben. How are you today?
Good, Todd.
Well, let's start off by telling me a little bit about the Everly facility. I can read online that you hold about 4.4 billion bushels. How do you split it up between corn and beans?
We're primarily, you know, we're about 60-40, mostly corn, though. We don't trade any wheat out in this neck of the woods. What we do is real light, but strictly corn and beans.
And what's your crops look like at the moment?
Currently, we right here specifically in northwest Iowa where we're at, it's pretty dry. It's if we don't catch a rain here in the next 2 weeks of August, we're at the point of 120 bushel corn or 200 plus corn, depends if we catch a rain.
And you need what, an inch, a half inch?
Right here in Everly, we need 2 inches, maybe a little more. We need an all-day soaker is what we need.
Yeah, and you need it soon then, within the next 2 weeks. So you're past pollination, you're in the midst of grain fill.
Mm-hmm, correct. And, you know, and everything pollinated real well. The temperatures and conditions were ideal out here. And we've got the ground strong enough to rebound, but we just need the moisture.
You've got a 25-car loader there, I think. Where does most of the grain go to?
Here in northwest Iowa, it's pretty unique in the fact that we have all kinds of, we're mostly a truck market, we have all kinds of ethanol plants, a couple of Laros, a couple of Poets.
Oh, wow. How long have you been at the plant, since before it was the Andersons, I take it, or not?
We were actually Green Plains.
Yeah, how long have you been there? Have you been there long enough that you... How did bases change once the ethanol plants came in is kind of the question I'm looking for.
Sure. Well, I've been here 4 years, and, you know, ethanol has been strong here for about 12.
Right.
And, you know, they say, you know, we with the heavy ground, this used to be corn surplus area, you know, and everything is rail markets, and now everything is real domestic. Truck markets stays put. Bases, comparatively to the state of Iowa, is we're traditionally very strong here in northwest Iowa.
And your bids for the day are?
Today, our closing cash corn bid is 586 and 1322 on soybeans.
Okay, thanks so much, Ben.
Thank you, Todd.
Ben Pruis is with the Andersons. He's in Everly, Iowa. That's in the northwestern part of the state. If you're looking for it, look for Spencer, and it's not very far from there. Join us on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. I'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey.
It's National Rice Pudding Day. While rice puddings are found in nearly every area of the world, rice was first cultivated in Asia. On this day in agricultural history in 1842, the U.S.-Canada border was defined by the Webster-Ashburton Treaty. The treaty also had clauses for extradition as well as prevention of African slave trade. In 1910, Alva Fisher of Chicago, Illinois, patented the electric washing machine. U.S. electric washing machine sales reached 913,000 units in 1928. By the way, the first laundromat in the U.S. was in Fort Worth, Texas, in 1934. Previous to the electric washing machine, washing machines were cranked by hand or the wash was scrubbed on a washboard. The scrub board was invented in 1797. In 1911, John Gates died. Gates was an inventor, promoter, and barbed wire manufacturer. He discovered a market for wire fencing on the Western Plains, and he helped convince ranchers to adopt barbed wire. Ultimately, he organized the American Steel and Wire Company. Incidentally, one of the first patents in the U.S. for barbed wire went to Joseph Glidden of DeKalb, Illinois. He made modifications to earlier versions. Glidden's wire, named the Winner, was produced by the Barb Fence Company in DeKalb. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
This is the closing market report for Friday. On the phone line with us to look at the weather forecast for the state of Illinois and how things finished up in the month of July is Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey. Good afternoon to you, Jim.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's go back and look at the month of July first. We're a little concerned about the number of growing degree days that have been gathering up since the corn was planted late. And I know we deal with these from May 1, but that's where it starts from. What do you see, and how did the month of July go?
Yeah, if you look at the month of July, we ended up at about 73 degrees, which is about 2 degrees below average. It was actually one of the cooler, in fact, it was the 19th coolest July on record, so a very cool month, and it was, for the most part, it was a fairly dry month as well, especially in the northern half of the state, although the southern half of the state got quite a bit of rain, and that pattern has kind of continued on into August now, with the first week or so of August being, again, very cool, and also getting lots of rain in the southern part of the state, but not as much in the central part of the state. So we've been kind of continuation of that pattern there. So we're kind of slipping behind on things like growing degree days. And also, you know, we've had a fairly, up until today, we had a stretch there of several days of just very cloudy conditions. So I'm a little bit worried about, just the sunlight, lack thereof is also a contributing factor. So
we need both heat and sunlight to finish the crop off, rainfall as well. Let's start with the sunlight and the heat. I think I heard somebody say that maybe a little bit later in the month we might have some heat building that could help the crop out. Is that right?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. The numbers I'm looking at from the forecast they're not really pessimistic, but they all are trending towards the cooler than average conditions. If you look at like the 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecast, all of those are pointing towards and continue to point towards the likelihood of below average temperatures. Now, we've been running just about 2.5 degrees below average. You know, like today, you know, the average for today in Champaign-Urbana is about 84 for a high. We're about at 80, 81 at this point. So, you know, it's not like we're having to pull out the sweaters or anything, but it is running a little on the cool side, and it looks to continue, for at least from the forecast I've seen.
And what do you see for the next several days in our part of the world?
Yeah, if you look at Champaign-Urbana in particular, our area, chance of rain tonight, but otherwise it's going to be fairly mild the next couple of days with highs in the low 80s, hovering around 81, 82, overnight lows in the low 60s and upper 50s. A moderate amount of humidity, but not too oppressive for this time of year. So, and really that continues on into next week. Got a 40% chance of rain on Monday and Monday night, and then fairly mild temperatures beyond that in the upper 70s for highs and the upper 50s for lows.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel is at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website and listen to Commodity Week. That one comes up at about 6 o'clock this evening.
Looking forward to having you.